folks, this is Pastor Mike Hoggard coming to you from Watchmen Studios with another Watchmen video broadcast. We're dealing with the capstone, that symbol on the back of the $1 bill, that evil eye that's looking at you all the time. Every time you pull out your wallet, you're looking at that thing. That thing staring at you. Gives you the creeps. Here's this occult symbol. And I say that in the truest sense. The word occult means secret, private. No one can know what this really means. And you have to ask yourself the question, who put this weird thing on the back of our $1 bill? Why did they do it? We covered all that in the Secret of the Seal, which is kind of what this is a part of. What does that thing mean? And so that's kind of what we've been looking at. With the idea of the capstone, that eye, that all-seeing eye that's on the back of the $1 bill on top of that unfinished pyramid. The unfinished pyramid has 13 rows, has 72 stones in it. That's coming. And then it's incomplete. It needs something to top it off. And so there's an all-seeing eye there that tops it off. And we're going to understand what that is, what it represents, how did it get there, and so on. And we're doing that by way of the scriptures. 2 Chronicles chapter 33. This is the story of King Manasseh, who sits on the throne, and he does some very, very bad things. Manasseh was 12 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 55 years in Jerusalem, but did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, like unto the abominations of the heathen, whom the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. For he built again the high places which Hezekiah his father had broken down, and he reared up altars for Baalim, and made groves, and worshipped all the hosts of heaven, and served them. And he built altars in the house of the Lord, whereof the Lord had said, in Jerusalem shall my name be forever. And he built altars for all the host of heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. That's what we're going to be dealing with. And he caused his children to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. Also, he observed times, and used enchantments, and used witchcraft, and dealt with a familiar spirit, and with wizards. He wrought much evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. And then he topped it all off. Verse 7, he set a carved image, the idol which he had made in the house of God, of which God had said to David and to Solomon his son, in this house and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen before all the tribes of Israel, will I put my name forever. And so here is Manasseh, and he's doing all these terrible things. But kings before him had made their children pass through fire, worship Molech, set up altars for Balaam, burned incense, did, you know, sorcery and all of this stuff. They had done that before him. But there was something that set Manasseh apart. He didn't just stop with, in fact, let's look at the list here. He didn't just stop with 13 things. Remember the 13 rows that's on the pyramid. He had to go the extra. He decided it wasn't finished. Wasn't satisfied with just doing a little witchcraft here and there. I'm going to make a carved image, which is what he did. Then he took that thing right into the heart of the temple of God. Think about it. Think about what the temple of God is. Think about what Paul said the temple of God is. It's our bodies. The Antichrist sitting in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. An abomination that makes things desolate. And so here is Manasseh acting this out. And it is no... I absolutely believe this idea that God has an order and a pattern, and he has numbered things in the scripture. And again, I'll never forget reading this for the first time, and I'm going, I wonder how many things he does here. I started counting them. I counted 13 things that he did. The last thing, it says he dealt with familiar spirit and with wizards. That's number 13, which is interesting. But then he goes and puts a carved image, the idol which he had made, inside the temple of God. Nobody had done that before. In other words, the work wasn't finished until that idol was sitting in there. And you and I both know. We get to Revelation 13, and we see that the false prophet has everybody make an image unto the beast, and then everybody worships this image of the beast. And so the correlation is there. The concept that this follows the capstone and the unfinished pyramid, you see it there. It's the great seal of the United States of America. 13 rows of stones on the unfinished pyramid. The capstone, that capstone would represent putting an idol in the house of God, in the temple of God. Anuit Coeptus, Novus Ordo Seclorum, a new order of the ages, a new world order. He favors the undertaking of a new world order, and I'm telling you, that's not God's eye there, all right? And again, we build on this concept, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he is God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. That matches the typology of what Manasseh was doing when he set that carved image in the house of God. You see a shadow. This is what Paul talked about in Hebrews. You see a shadow or a foreshadowing of things to come. Foreshadowing is done in literature all the time. And it's in this book. The foreshadowing of what is going to happen, the picture of what's going to happen, can be seen by what has already happened. Solomon said, that which was is that which shall be. There is no new thing under the sun. And so what we see here with Manasseh, setting that image in there, is a picture of mankind making an image to the beast and worshiping it. But mankind can't get there all at once. We can't, let's think of America for a minute. America at one time followed the word of God. I'm not saying everybody in America was wholesome, clean, pure, righteous, saved, born again. I'm not saying that. I'm saying at one time there was a religion that was of America, and it was Bible Christianity. It was a fear of God's ways, and the Ten Commandments was in the heart of our nation. And people lived pretty well. And so you can't just walk up, take America, and say, hey, America, we're going to follow Baal now. All right, everybody jump on. It's not going to happen that way. It has to be done like with Freemasons, or like with anybody in the cult, anybody in the mystery religions that Fat Albert Pike always talked about. He always talked about initiations, rituals, rites, levels. Climb it up the Masonic ladder until you reach that pinnacle, until you reach that that light there at the top. And that's what's happening. That's what happened with Manasseh. So then we're taking these things that we learned from Manasseh, and we're finding out what's going on now that is leading everybody to finally make this image of the beast and set this image as like an authority over all mankind. People are going to do this willingly, but they have to be taken in grades and in steps, and that's exactly what's going on. So we've dealt with setting up the high places. Last week we started talking about the altars and what they were for, and we kind of finished off with that. We were talking about the burning of incense on these altars, burning incense to Baal, which was a symbol of what these different prayer types are in the church. And now we're going to look at the altars of sacrifice of Baal. Let's read the scripture, 2 Chronicles 33. Let's pick it up in verse 3. For he built again the high places which Hezekiah his father had broken down, and he reared up altars for Balaam, and made groves, and worshipped all the host of heaven, and served them. And he built altars in the house of the Lord, whereof the Lord had said, in Jerusalem shall my name be forever. And he built altars for all the host of heaven. That's what we're going to look at today. He built altars for all the host of heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. Now, what we're going to look at specifically, this particular part of the teaching where he's making all these altars, it's in verse 5 where he said, and he built altars for all the host of heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. So what is the host of heaven? Well, it would be, and this is how the Bible defines it, it would be the, let's say, the sun, the moon, the planets, the stars of the heavens. And the Bible actually, I think, answers the question better than any astronomer has ever answered. What are those luminaries that are up in the heavens? What are those things? And the Bible's teaching you that these things represent or literally are angels. In Revelation 12, we have the dragon, and he takes his tail and he gathers one-third of the stars of heaven and casts them down to the earth. Then we find out that he's taken one-third of the angels who were fighting with him against Michael. Michael prevailed. And there was found no more room for them, and so they were cast down to the earth. Stars are angels. But in this case here, they're bad ones. See, the good angels, anytime they ever showed up, they didn't want anybody bowing down and worshiping them. You remember John was ministered to by an angel, and then John fell down and worshipped him. The angel said, "Get up! Hey, John, get up! Hi, Lord, you're going to get us both in trouble. Would you stand up and knock that off?" The real good angels don't let anybody worship them. The bad ones, they not only want you to worship them. Then the Bible, and I've had people ask me this, what does it mean when they worship angels? The Bible talks about, in this passage here, where it talks about they worshiped and served them. They served, they did what the stars told them to do. You know what that is, don't you? That's astrology. Astrology says that the placement of the luminaries, the objects that are in the sky, the placement, the order, the seasons that they come in, or the house. Let's say Sagittarius is in the house of Virgo. What's he doing in there? They're in that house and so on, and that means that your life is going to do this, and this is going to happen to you today, and we can read it in the stars. In other words, whatever the stars, Nancy Reagan did this when Ronald Reagan was president. It's one of the blemishes that's on Ronald Reagan's presidency was that Nancy Reagan hired an astrologer to tell her and to give her advice, and she passed this on to Ronnie. Not right. But you know what? That was back in the 80s. Now we're in the 2015s. And astrology is everywhere. People are serving the angels. Whatever those evil angels tell them to do, that is exactly what they do. And God warned. He warned his people against serving these angels. He begged and pleaded with them. He said, when you get into that land, you got my word there. He said, I want you to give heed to my word. Because if you don't, there's going to be a replacement religion takeover. You're going to be serving angels. Look at what he said in Deuteronomy chapter 4. You're going to like this. Okay, I've covered this in a Pastor Mike online. I'm not sure if I dealt with it in Watchman broadcast or not. But a friend of our ministry sent me some information, Deuteronomy chapter 4, and he said, Pastor, take a look at this. What do you think? And I went, that's exactly right. Let me show you what I mean. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 15. God says, take ye therefore good heed unto yourselves, for ye saw no manner of similitude on the day that the Lord spake unto you in Horeb out of the midst of the fire. Let me stop right here. You know what a similitude is. It's something similar. He said, when you were at the base of Mount Horeb, which is Mount Sinai, in Exodus 19, you heard the trumpet, and you heard my voice, and you saw the fire and the smoke, and you were scared to death. God said, did you see me? Did you see like any image of me? Did you see like a silhouette of me? Did you see, you know, like a photograph of me? God said, no, you didn't see anything of me. So he says, I want you to take heed. Because you get in that land, you're going to learn about idol worship, and all of a sudden now you're going to be making a statue that you're going to tell everybody, that's God. And God says, you didn't see me, so how can you make an image of me? And it's like walking into a Catholic church or a Lutheran church or any other kind of church that has a statue of Jesus somewhere in it. How do you know it's Jesus? I can tell you that it's not. I know for a fact that whatever church you go into and there's a Jesus statue in there, I can tell you it's not Jesus. How do I know? You didn't see Jesus. And the person that carved that didn't see Jesus. They carved it out of the imagination of their own mind, or they had someone stand in for Jesus while they carved it out. But that's not Jesus. And God, that's what God's telling them. Now watch this, watch this. Verse 16, lest ye corrupt yourselves and make you a graven image, the similitude of any figure, the likeness of male or female, the likeness of any beast that is on the earth, the likeness of any winged fowl that flieth in the air, the likeness of any thing that creepeth on the ground, the likeness of any fish that is in the waters beneath the earth, and lest thou lift up thine eyes unto heaven, and when thou seest the sun and the moon and the stars, even all the host of heaven, shouldest be driven to worship them and serve them, there it is there, which the Lord thy God hath divided unto all nations under the whole heaven. God said, don't corrupt yourselves. And do not make an image. And then he gives a list here of things that they should not make an image of. And this friend of our ministry sent it to me, and I'm just going, oh, that is good. You know what I like? I like it when I'm not the only guy who finds amazing, wondrous things in this Bible. Because there are people out there now that are reading the Bible and studying it, learning it, knowing it, and believe it. They don't question it. They don't doubt it. They don't say, well, I think, you know, a better translation would say that. They don't do that. They're actually not looking for mistakes. They're actually looking for wisdom. They're looking for guidance. They're looking for illumination. It's what they're looking for. Okay, we can have our minds illumined. Paul said we can have our minds illuminated by the Word of God. So this guy sent me that. I'm just going, that's absolutely amazing. Let me show you what he's talking about. He said, Pastor, you remember Baphomet? I said, yeah, I've talked about him several times. Go look at Deuteronomy chapter 4 and see if you don't see Baphomet there. So I went, looked at the verses, the likeness of anything, male or female. Baphomet's male and female, both. Any beasts on the earth? Baphomet's like a goat. Likeness of any winged fowl? Baphomet has wings. The likeness of any creepeth, anything that creepeth on the ground? It's got snakes. Likeness of any fish is in the waters. And I bet you didn't know this. And I found this out a couple weeks before, or maybe a week before this guy sent it. Because I was reading some description about Baphomet, and it talked about how he had fish scales on his belly. And I went, I didn't know that. The likeness of any fish is in waters beneath the earth. He's got fish scales. And he talks about the sun, moon, and the stars. And let me show you Baphomet. Let me show you. I broke this down here, and I want you to see it. Number one, Baphomet is an image of male and female together in the same package. Notice that it has female breasts, bosoms, and then that little rod shaft coming up out of his lap. That's not a radio antenna. That's his male part. And then he said, any beast, he's got a goat head and he's got goat feet, that's a beast. Or any winged fowl, he has wings. Or any creeping thing, he's got two snakes there around his antenna pole. And then it says, any fish, and there it is, the scales there behind the two serpents there. And then you notice up on the upper left hand, the sun is darkened. And then on the lower right hand, the moon is darkened. That's a dun-dun-dun, right? Because what is it that Peter preached on the day of Pentecost? The sun will be darkened, the moon will be turned to blood. Other places in the Bible talk about the sun being darkened and the moon will not give her light. And what you see here in Baphomet is the hint of those things. You have a partial sun, but you can see that it's being darkened. You have a partial moon, but it's being darkened as well. And it represents opposites. But what you have here is you have exactly everything that God said, don't make an image of. That's what they... Eliphas Levi, who was an occultist extraordinaire back in the 1800s, he envisioned this in his mind. I think the God of this world, the prince of the power of the air, I think that spirit put that in his mind. And had he known and believed the Bible, he would have known from Deuteronomy 4 that what he was envisioning was in fact exactly what God told him not to do. Eliphas Levi. By the way, that wasn't his real name. I can't remember his real name, but he called himself Levi because that was the Hebrew form of his name, and he believed that he came from the Levite priest. Think about it, all right? His people was specifically told not to make this image. And so the image of Baphomet is everything that God told him not to make an image of. That's who it is. Male and female, beast, winged fowl, creeping thing, fish, sun, and the moon together. And God said, don't worship that thing. But God already knew that that's exactly what they would do. They would be worshiping and serving the hosts of heaven. These evil angels, one third of them, that with Lucifer cast down from heaven to the earth. They're worshiping and serving them. I think that is an integral part of the fourth kingdom. Here's something interesting, because this just happened. In Oklahoma City, there was one of the Oklahoma congressmen who used his own money, about $10,000, to make a stone monument of the Ten Commandments from the Bible and put it there in front of the state capitol. Well, you know, the ACLU got involved and everybody else got involved, and the Satanists said, well, here's what we'll do. If you think you have a right to worship your God at the state capitol, then we're going to worship our God at the state capitol, and we're going to make this image of our God. So they made it. It hasn't made its way down to Oklahoma City yet, but in Detroit, they had an unveiling of the image of their God. Now remember, God said, don't make this image. Isn't that what he said? Take a look at it. Largest public satanic ceremony in history. A little before midnight on Saturday, a crowd of around 700, I think that's interesting, gathered in an old industrial warehouse a few blocks from the Detroit River for what they'd been told was the largest public satanic ceremony in history. Most of them professed to be adherents of Satanism, that loosely organized squad of the occult that defines itself as a religious group. Others came simply because they were curious. After all, Satanists exist on the popular psyche as those who casually sacrifice goats and impregnate Mia Farrow with Lucifer's child. That would be Rosemary's baby, by the way, if you don't know that. If this ceremony was indeed unprecedentedly big, who knew what would be in store? And so this was by invitation only. 700 Satanists showing up for the unveiling of this image. You need to take a look at it. It's Baphomet. It's like male and female, beast, creeping thing, winged fowl. It's even got the scales. And oh, by the way, and I had this sent to me yesterday. Pastor Michael was looking at that deal there of Baphomet. And you know where it said in 2 Corinthians, I believe, where God said, what agreement hath the temple of God with idols and so on? And God said, let me pull it up here. God said, wherefore come up from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. That's unclean. And I will receive you and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and my daughters. Take a look at that statue again. Because not only did they carve out and cast the image of everything God told them not to cast, they also put a son and a daughter there. You know what? I have been, let's see, this would be well into the sixth year of the Watchman video broadcast. And since that time, we've Pastor Mike online Bible study, streaming our church services, and everything else that we do. And I'm trying to get people to understand and realize, don't throw away an old King James Bible simply because it's old and the churches are using new ones now. Because there's more to discover in here than there is anywhere else in the world. There is more understanding that's going to come from here than from any other place in the world. And here's another person looking at the Word of God, seeing sons and daughters, and there it is right there. And God put it in this book and preserved it so that when we are in the time that we're in, we see these things going on and people are going, I know what that is. This is that which was spoken by the prophet. Read your Bible, people. It's got it all in there. All right? So, God told them not to worship the host of heaven, the angels, the sun, the moon, the stars, the planets. God told them not to worship that. But that's exactly what they did. We find out in Acts chapter 7. This is Stephen in front of the Sanhedrin, and he's telling them all about how the Jews did exactly what God told them not to do. He's preaching Christ to them. They don't understand it, but he's preaching Christ to them. And in Acts chapter 7, verse 42, Stephen said, "Then God turned and gave them up to worship the host of heaven. As it is written in the book of the prophets, O ye house of Israel, have ye offered to me slain beasts and sacrifices by the space of 40 years in the wilderness? Yea, ye took up the tabernacle of Moloch, and the star of your..." See, that's the star right there. "The star of your god Remphan, figures which you made to worship them, and I will carry you away beyond Babylon." Stephen is quoting from Amos chapter 5, and here's what it says in Amos, "But ye have borne the tabernacle of your Moloch and your Chiun." Chiun is Remphan, "your images." And then he said, "the star of your God, which ye made to yourselves." Now, historically, and all the smart people in the world agree that Remphan and Chiun, they are known by different names in different places. Remember, these people who come out and say, "We all worship the same God, he's just a God of different names." It's the same God, though. They're not talking about the God that you and I worship. His name is Jehovah, Jesus Christ, King of Kings, Lord of Lords. That's his name. Prince of Peace, that's his name. Jealous is his name. One is his name, all right? But not Allah and Buddha and Yahweh and all these other... They're all different names of the same God. Chiun and Remphan are other names for the god Saturn. And you're going, "Ooh, wait a minute, I know what that is. That's a car company." Well, they only named it after that. That's a what? Take a look at it. That is a heavenly object. It is one of the heavenly luminaries. It is the planet Saturn. And when you say Saturn, you automatically think of the tilted rings that are around the planet Saturn. And here's the thing. One civilization after another has always worshipped what they call the seven stars. And it starts with the sun, the moon, those are the first two, and then you have five planets: Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. Up until we started building telescopes, no one knew about Uranus or Neptune or poor little Pluto. I think Pluto should be a planet, that's what I think. Nobody really knew about them. But they could see Jupiter, they could see Saturn. They knew its movements throughout the sky, and they worshipped those seven deities. Remember the seven devils that came out of Mary Magdalene? She was a worshiper of those. The seven divine beings that are in the Kabbalah? Mary Magdalene, that's what she was. A windswept house, a house that has been cleaned out. The devil leaves, but it's cleaned out, and then what happens? Seven more come in worse than he was. Think about it. That's what those seven planets represent. Seven heads of the beast. Seven unclean spirits, like the seven spirits of God, only the opposite. And that's what Saturn is, the seventh of them. And just for, you know, so you can kind of get your bearings on this, the seventh day of the week is Saturn's day. It's where they get it from, all right? And there are people who worship the Saturn day. To this day, they do. Okay? I'm not going to get into that. But Saturn was one of their chief gods. And Stephen mentioned it, and Amos mentioned it. He called it the star of your God. We're going to find out what that means in Ezekiel chapter 1. Here's what I think is so cool. And again, the Bible's telling us that these planets, these stars, are angels. Now, you can believe the astronomers, or you can believe the Word of God. Astronomers will not cover my transgressions, but the Word of God makes me clean. So I'm going to believe the Word of God. And so, you notice that Saturn, when you look at it, in fact, just take a look at this picture again, okay, of Saturn. what you really see are two circles, two wheels. Ezekiel chapter 1. Now, as I beheld the living creatures, behold, one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures with his four faces. The appearance of the wheels and their work was like unto the color of a barrel. And they four had one likeness, and their appearance and their work was as it were a wheel in the middle of a wheel. And when they went upon their four sides, and they turned not when they went. As for their rings, look at that. They were so high that they were dreadful, and their rings were full of eyes round about them four. And when the living creatures went, the wheels went by them. And when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Now, this may all seem strange to you, but these are the four angels that support the firmament, the sea of glass, clear as crystal, upon which sits the throne of God. And the Psalms say that God rides in a chariot, even thousands of angels. Chariots have wheels. And these four living creatures have built into their bodies a circle within a circle, and God calls them wheels and rings, just like the planet Saturn. So what are we seeing here? We're seeing, we understand and believe from the Bible that there are certain angels, bad or good, that have a wheel within the wheel. They have circles, they have wheels, they have rings. And Saturn has rings. So what are we looking at? Even if you don't want to believe that Saturn really is an angel, then think of the symbolism of Saturn and these rings and these wheels. Think of it that way. If you don't want to go that far, I'm fine. But think about it. Now, here's something that nobody knew. Well, maybe some people knew. Here's something that nobody knew up until the last, let's say, 10 years. I don't remember when they quite did it, but scientists were looking at satellite imagery. They sent a spaceship out there to take pictures of Saturn and so on. They were looking at it, and they noticed, I think it's on the North or South Pole, one of the two, the cloud formation. Saturn is like Jupiter. It's known as a gas giant. Sometimes I was called that. But anyway, a gas giant, like Jupiter. There is a solid core of rock or some kind of mineral, but it is composed largely of gases. And Saturn is that way as well. Okay? And somebody noticed that at one of the poles of Saturn, the cloud formations formed a perfect hexagon, a six-sided shape, a box with six sides. Not only did they just capture it once, and they thought, well, you know, it's just an anomaly, but as the clouds whirl around the planet Saturn, that octagon or that hexagon stays in perfect shape. Here's pictures of it right here. Look at that. Isn't that weird? Isn't it? Do we not think it's bizarre that we have this humongous, and by the way, Saturn is bigger, way bigger than the Earth, on this humongous gas planet with these swirling toxic gases floating around, that they make a perfect hexagon at the bottom of Saturn? How did that get there? And a hexagon, let me show you what it represents. A hexagon represents a number. Take a look at it. Represents the number 6 because it has 6 sides to it. All right? Flonase commercial. 6 is greater than 1. And you see all these hexagons everywhere, especially on this. And the number 6, not only do you have the number 6 there, but you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hexagons each with 6 sides. And then over on the Flonase package, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hexagons again, each with 6 sides. There's something going on here. And I started seeing hexagons everywhere, packaging. advertisements, video games, started seeing hexagons everywhere. I started collecting pictures of what I was seeing. I'd go to the store and collect pictures of triple sixes and triple hexagons everywhere. Here's some more of them right here. IBM, a new way to code. And to see the three sixes there, the three hexagons? Here is one called Initiated, a double hexagon. Power Scrub, three hexagons. Healy's Golf Clubs, three hexagons again. Here's a video game for, I think, iPhone, three hexagons. Here's the front of a car, three hexagons. Here is Infamil, the Infamil package. It's got hexagons all over it. And if you want more of this, I have this website called 666alert.net. And I have probably close to anywhere from 200 to 300 examples. We're adding more all the time. And if you see any packages, a lot of times they'll show up on TV commercials, and I just pause the TV and take a picture. That's what I do. TV commercials, packaging, video games. You go to Sam's, go to Costco, go to the store. You see hexagons. The Walmart logo is called the Spark. It's got six rays coming out of it. Okay. And I've got pictures where they group three of those spark images together. Okay? Everywhere. If you see that, take a picture of it, send it to us, and mark it 666 alert, and we'll get that on our blog if it fits in, you know, with our criteria. All right? But where did that image come from? Why is that image on Saturn? And what does it have to do with the star of their god? The hexagon sits inside of a hexagram. The two are a little bit different in how they're drawn. But a hexagram is like a triangle pointing up, interlaced with a triangle that's pointing down. You see it here. By the way, Eliphas Levi drew this one too. The one on the left. Notice you have opposites, black and white. You have air and sea there. You have the serpent with its tail in its mouth. That's the Ouroboros. It's a symbol for like new life and new resurrection, but it's the occult version of it. Over there on the right, you have the 12 zodiac signs. You have the sun, moon, and stars represented there, and the star that's represented is the star of their god, Remphan. You see, and I didn't really pull from a lot of different places, but you can note, you can do the research yourself. The hexagram is not a symbol that was exclusively used to represent the nation of Israel. It goes all the way back, ancient Babylon, Sumeria, the Egyptians, the Indians, and I don't mean the American Indians, the real Indians, all the way back in their religions, temples that were built thousands of years ago, have a hexagram in there. And where did Israel, what Bible verse declares that the symbol, they call it the Star of David? What verse is that? It's not in your Bible. The only reference to a star related to the people of Israel, Stephen declared it and Amos declared it. They were speaking the same thing. It's the star of their god, Remphan. And to this day, that god, that deity, rules over the people of Israel. Now, I don't hate Israel. I love them. God is going to save a remnant out of those people. Give them redemption. Give them the forgiveness of their sins. They're God's people, for crying out loud. I don't hate them. I don't curse them either. Right now, they are already under a curse. And the deity that rules over them to this day is still Remphan. It is still Saturn, marked by that hexagon or that hexagram. The hexagram can be seen as like a combination of any two or even all four of the element symbols, earth, air, fire, and water. Notice that earth and air are opposites, pointing in different directions. Fire and water are opposites, pointing in different directions. And when you fuse them together, you have the hexagram. Over here, a Masonic emblem with the two pillars, Jachin and Boaz. Notice the DNA vine twirling around them. Isn't that interesting? And then you have the and the hexagram is like a fusion of things. Notice there the sun and the moon. By the way, you have the seven stars up there as well. You have the sun and the moon and the stars, the planets. You have father and mother all joined together. You have superior and inferior all fused and joined together in that hexagram. And that's ultimately what that symbol represents. It is the symbol of they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. And so when they're worshiping the host of heaven, the idea is at some point that host of heaven is going to come down to the earth and mingle themselves with the seed of men. Mankind thinks that they're there to turn him into gods, but that's not how it's going to be. Let's go back to 2 Chronicles 33 and let's get a little bit more understanding about this. For he built again the high places which Hezekiah's father had broken down, and he reared up altars for Balaam. He made groves and worshipped all the host of heaven and served them. And then notice in verse 5, he built altars for all the host of heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. Again, Manasseh building these altars for the stars, for the angels, building altars for all the hosts of heaven, which would include the sun, the moon, and all of the stars, all the heaven luminaries. Again, that is not mutually exclusive to some terrible thing that Israel and Israel alone did. This is a religious idea and a concept that didn't originate from them. When they went into the land, they learned it. They learned it in Egypt. They learned it in Babylon. They learned it from the Assyrians. They learned it from everybody. And they were worshiping the sun, the moon, and the stars. And they were building altars for all the host of heaven. Now, I want you to think of that about this now. Because we dealt with last time the idea that an altar symbolizes like an altar of prayer. When you burn incense on it, it represents prayer or religious duty or contemplation of the gods. But there's another altar. It's an altar of sacrifice. It's an altar upon which something or someone is going to have their blood spilled, and they are going to be sacrificed on an altar dedicated to the gods, the host of heaven, the evil angels, devils, sacrificing unto devils is what's done. And that's been done throughout antiquity. Let's go to Stonehenge. Stonehenge, there's many theories on Stonehenge. I think the giants built Stonehenge. That's what I think. You got these pillars, these rocks, and this little temple area here, an open air temple. Why would it be open air? Because the temple and the altar of sacrifice that they were doing there at Stonehenge was intended for the gods, the luminaries of the heavens, the sun, the moon, and the stars. In fact, there is one thing that is known about Stonehenge is that every year, I think it's at the summer solstice, pagans, druids, they all gather around. There's a huge gathering at Stonehenge on June 21st, the summer solstice, because as the sun rises on that particular day, it shines a beam of light across the top of this stone through the pillar there at Stonehenge and lights on something. I don't remember what it is. But it's obvious that Stonehenge was built as a memorial, an altar, a temple of sacrifice and worship and serving the luminary object called the sun. The pagans and the Stonehengers and the stoners and the giants, they're not the only ones to ever worship the sun. People have been doing it all over the world. The Japanese did it for years. The Chinese did it. They have these gods, the sun god. Osiris was the sun god and so on. But they build these things, altars of sacrifice, in honor of the heavenly luminaries, the host of heaven. Here's another one. The Giza Pyramids. built, I believe, I didn't discover this information, somebody else has, but I think I get it. I think I believe it. The Giza pyramids match almost perfectly the alignment of three stars in the constellation of Orion. It literally is the belt or the band of Orion. And did you know that God talks about in the Word of God loosing the bands of Orion? And the band of Orion is those three stars that make up his belt. And those are the Giza pyramids, almost perfectly shaped. Even you have two bright stars and one diminished star in that belt. And that's how the pyramids were built. Two big pyramids and one smaller one. And the smaller one is set off just a little bit to the side. They're not in a perfect line, just like the stars of the belt of Orion. Chichen Itza, which is down in Mexico. Again, and Chichen Itza, I don't know if they ever sacrificed people on the pyramids in Giza. I don't know if they did. We do know for a fact that this pyramid, this high place, remember we were talking about that? This high place in Mexico called Chichen Itza, they sacrificed people up there. They cut them, ripped their hearts out a lot of times while they were standing there looking at them. Pulled their heart out while it was still beating and gushing blood all over the priest and all over the top of this pyramid. Well, this particular pyramid was built. Take a look at this picture. I've talked about this before. Notice this sunlight going up that stairwell, how it kind of dips up and down like this. One day a year, June 21st, the summer solstice, the sunlight hits the side of this, or the corner of this pyramid, in such a way is that it makes it look like a serpent is descending down from the heavens, coming down to the earth. That's what you see there. And it does it on June 21st. I think, I may be wrong, I think on December 21st, the winter solstice, it makes it look like it's ascending back up. But you get the idea, don't you? Serpents coming down from the heavens to the earth at the summer solstice, longest day of the year. Wow. Think about that. But they did sacrifices on the top of this pyramid. It was an altar of sacrifice to the host of heaven. Here's another one, the Pyramid of the Moon, which I think is in I think it's in Peru. I may be wrong. The Pyramid of the Moon, that's what it's called. Why? Because it's dedicated to the moon. What did they do up there? They killed people. Sacrifice them to the hosts of heaven. Here's another one. The Library of Congress. You say, that's not a pagan altar. Well, maybe not too many people are killed there, but see that floor arrangement there? I did a zoom in on one of those images there, and I'm pretty sure that's Aquarius. In fact, I know it is. It's Aquarius. If you look at that floor layout, this is as you walk into the Library of Congress. You will see the zodiac signs right there. And in the middle there, you have basically an image of the sun. You have the sun, moon, and the stars. You have the 12 constellations. By the way, let me just kind of back out for a minute and teach you something. In the wilderness, when God was leading his people, every now and then they'd stop and camp. When they stopped in camp, the very first thing that they did was the Levites, who were responsible for this, immediately began setting up the tabernacle. They put in the curtain around the outside, then they erected the sanctuary, the most holy place, and set the altar in place, and the laver, and the table of showbread, and the menorah, and then behind that, the most holy place. Nobody could go in there, set the Ark of the Covenant, and they would set the tabernacle there in the middle, and then the tribes would then set themselves. Some had to be on north, some had to be on the east, and it was designated who was there, some on the south and some on the west. So what you had was, are you watching this? What you had was, you had God in the midst of his people, and he was surrounded by the 12 tribes, which God said they would be as the stars of heaven. Take a look at this again. I just caught this. Take a look at that. You have the image of the sun surrounded by the 12 signs of the zodiac. Dun, 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 right there in the Library of Congress. You know, the United States government that has to be separate from religion. Washington, D.C. is probably one of the most religious places in the world. Only it's not Bible Christianity religion. The gods are present everywhere in Washington, D.C. Monuments like the obelisk, the Temple of Zeus, the Lincoln Memorial, the goddess, Mystery Babylon, standing on top of the Capitol Dome building. And then you go in the Library of Congress, not only do you walk across this floor, but you've got imagery everywhere, all throughout Washington, D.C., of the zodiac signs. David Ovison wrote a book on all of the zodiac stuff that's in Washington, D.C. I have a copy of it. I haven't read all of it, but I have a copy of it. And if you're interested in that, you read it. He did more research than I did. But it's all there. Altars, temples built to the host of heaven. This is the Scottish Rite Lodge in Washington, D.C. It's 13 blocks north of the White House. Think about that. And you can actually, I've been in this room. I didn't think I'd ever get to go in. They take you on a tour through it. I've been in this room. One of the most prominent features in this room, look at there at the picture at the upper left-hand corner. There's a four-cornered altar there. And I want you to notice that in front of that altar is a pillow. Why? Is it so you can go sleep there? No. At that altar, whoever is part of that lodge must get on their knees and bow in front of that altar. Now that altar, in a lot of Masonic lodges in America, they all have an altar, and there's usually going to be probably a King James Bible or some other translation, but usually it's King James. A King James Bible with a square and compass on it. Okay? Sacrifice. Think about it, okay? But anyway, at this lodge, the House of the Temple Lodge in Washington, D.C., they've got a copy of the Bible, the Jewish Talmud, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, they have a representation of four or five major religions on the planet. They're all in there, and they're all worshiping the same God, the architect of the universe. All right, that's what they're doing. Directly overhead of that altar is a skylight. The ceiling is opened up to the heavens. So whatever is participated on that altar is done in the presence of the heavenly luminary objects. And I did some counting. You look at this picture, there's six sections of glass across the top, six of them going down, and six going diagonally. Dun, dun, dun. 666. Okay? Now, when you bow at this altar, you are knelt not only in front of this altar in the presence of all the host of heaven, but you are knelt in front of a wooden chair that has a canopy over it. And that chair is exactly 33 feet tall. Think about it. Masonic number 33. All right? Christ being 33 when he made a show of his enemies, when he's on the cross. And you are elevated five steps up to that throne. In other words, the person who ascends to that throne goes up five steps. And then he sits on the 33-foot-tall throne. And whoever is in that Masonic lodge, when they're knelt before that altar, they are actually bowing and kneeling before someone who is called the worshipful master. The significance of the five steps are, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. There's a throne there. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation, the worshipful master rules over the lodge. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Do you know who the Most High was? It's Jesus Christ. the worshipful master. And by the way, this is Isaiah 14. I've read it so many times, you probably should already know it. Five steps, five things here, that whoever is the worshipful master of this lodge walks up these steps. He ascends into heaven. He exalts his throne above the stars of God. He sits upon the mount of the congregation. He ascends above the heights of the clouds. He will be like the Most High. He is worshipped as the worshipful master of the Freemason's lodge. Anybody who's ever been a Freemason will tell you, you're told to kneel and bow before your worshipful master. And I had a preacher tell me, Mike, he said, I thought about this, and I had a guy in my church that was a lodge member, and he said, I went to talk to him, and he said, there's nothing wrong with being a Mason, we're Christians. And he said, you have in your lodge a man called worshipful master. He said, yeah, that's right. Jesus said, no man can serve two masters. What are you saying? Well, either Jesus is going to be your Lord and Master, or this other guy is going to be your Master. But you can't serve both of them. And I went, that's really good. So the Temple of the Lodge in Washington, D.C., an altar of sacrifice, because the Mason, at that point, sacrifices everything that he would have been or is, and yields and worships the hosts of heaven in front of the 33-foot tall throne. Now, let's bring this idea in with this, the worshipful master, the number 33 being this high Mason number, Jesus Christ being the sacrifice for man's sins, being 33 years old. Because remember that the idea, the premise is that I believe mankind is being taken on these levels. We go from one. Think about all you watch TV from the 50s, like, you know, Father Knows Best and Leave It to Beaver. You ever seen any bikinis on Leave It to Beaver? Father Knows Best. You ever see any of the Kardashian women in Father Knows Best? You ever see, I don't know, two women in bed kissing one another on Father Knows Best? No. Those things were taboo just 60 years ago in this country. Taboo. Nobody, you couldn't do that. You didn't do that in public. It just wasn't what America was. How did we get to where we are now? How do we get to where we're dealing with this right now in our county? 17-year-old boy who puts on a wig and a dress and goes to school every day, public school in Hillsboro, Missouri, and he walks into the girls' bathroom, and the school has to let him do it. How do we get there? One step at a time. By the way, this man, this boy, 17 years old, if you've seen a picture of him, he's got the face of a man. But he has the hair of a woman. Revelation chapter 9. That's what this is all about. It's where it's going, people. And so here we're being taken. We went from Father Knows Best and that morality and that public way of appearing. It goes from that to where we are now. How did we get there? One step at a time. We're being taken on these steps. We're accepting things now we never would have accepted before. And just as Manasseh offered sacrifices to all the hosts of heaven. By the way, dealing with this number 33, how much is one third as far as a number is concerned? 33%, isn't it? How many angels fall from heaven? 33% of them. By the way, in the front of Morals and Dogma, you have Ordo Ab Caeo, you have the double-headed eagle, And under his wings are 33 stars exactly. That's all the host of heaven that fall. So let's look at this number for a minute, and let's look at some sacrifices that were made. JFK, November 22nd, 11/22 is the date. That's 33. Dallas, Texas, right close to the 33rd parallel. It's on 32.5 degrees, something like that. Okay, it's between the 32nd and 33rd parallel. All right, a sacrifice was made. A 46-year-old man, 46, the number of chromosomes, human body, at Dallas, Texas. The street layout where JFK was sacrificed, Elm Street, Market Street, they all come together in what's called the Triple Underpass. That street layout was designed, and it looks just like Baal's Shaft, an obelisk. And JFK was sacrificed at the tip of this obelisk. And this obelisk touches a highway called Highway 77. Remember where that number comes from. In Luke chapter 3, Jesus was the 77th in line from God through Adam. Think about it. And who was he? He was the sacrifice, hence that number. By the way, JFK's limousine, the license plate on it is, the number is GG. You know what that is? A, B, C, D, E, F, G. 77 on the front of his license plate in the very car that he was assassinated in. And oh, by the way, Dealey Plaza, they already had an obelisk built there before JFK ever showed up. Right at Dealey Plaza, right in that grassy area where the three streets combine together. Think about it. It's like right at the tip of the street layout, which makes an obelisk. That street layout points to a river that runs just right on the other side of Highway 77 called the Trinity River. And again, you have this symbolism of three highways or three roadways converging into one at Highway 77 pointing to the Trinity River. So let's take in something else now that might match this for a second. The Trinity site. The Trinity site is where the first atomic bomb was detonated, Alamogordo, New Mexico. It's on the 33rd parallel. And oh look, the marker that they put up at ground zero where the bomb was detonated. They put an obelisk there. They put a pyramid there is what they did. 33rd parallel. So they went and take an atomic bomb. We built another one. We drop one on Hiroshima. But we're not done. So then we drop one on Nagasaki. And Nagasaki is between the 32nd and 33rd parallel. And they mounted up a Baal's Shaft as a monument to ground zero there again. And that particular bomb, I can't remember if it was Fat Man or Little Boy. It might have been Little Boy. That's the two atomic bombs, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The bombs were Fat Man and Little Boy. I think it was Little Boy. It was dropped over Nagasaki. I may be wrong. But notice the number on the front of the plane that dropped that bomb on a city between the 32nd and 33rd parallel. Wow. Pope John Paul I. How you doing? Okay. Pope John Paul I was made pope, and 33 days later, he's dead. He was killed. He uncovered very, very evil things going on in the Vatican, including a branch of Freemasonry called the P2. And he was going to have some people run out of office, including Cardinal Jean Villot, who was the Vatican Secretary of State. A lot of banking stuff going on between them and the mafioso there in Italy and the P2 Masons. So he was killed 33 days after being pope. That was no accident. It was a sacrifice to the host of heaven. Highway 77, we mentioned that. comes out of Dallas and goes all the way down to Waco, Texas. A burnt offering made just off of Highway 77. David Koresh, you can do the math. Born in 1959, died in 1993. Had he lived to August 17th, he would have been 34 years old. But he was killed before his 34th birthday. He was 33. Exactly. Highway 77. A burnt offering, a burnt sacrifice. That was what? April 20th? And then a year later to the day, the Oklahoma City bombing. The Alfred P. Murrah building. It has three rows of 11 columns that supported that building. You can see those columns in the blown out portion of the building, which means there was exactly 33 columns holding that building up. Timothy McVeigh. They found him guilty of a terrorist act, blowing up all those, killing all those babies in that daycare. Killing all those babies in that daycare who were there, while the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the people who, like, investigate explosive stuff, they had an office in that building. They were all told not to come into work that day. There's a spirit. There is a spirit. You say, I don't see how all this works. These are spirits we're dealing with. We're not just dealing with men and how they can make things happen. We're dealing with spirits who guide them and work all of these things out. And if you remember, I remember it clear as a bell. George Bush was president. John Ashcroft used to be the governor of the state of Missouri, a Assembly of God person, Christian, said right before they were going to execute McVeigh, they put a stay of his execution because they said his lawyers said there was new evidence that came up. McVeigh was 32 at the time when he would have died. Then he had a birthday. And a month later, they said, no, we're going to go ahead and proceed. Now he's 33. Now we execute him. Sacrifice made. 33. The stars of heaven that fall, a third of them, 33%. September 11th, 2001. We're going to see that anniversary here in another day or two. September 11th, 2001. These two buildings, you see there on the bottom part of your screen? That's the beginning of the steel construction of these two towers. 1968 is when they started that. 2001, it's exactly 33 years. These buildings and everybody in them, an altar of sacrifice. Muhammad Atta, one of the terrorists, the pilot of Flight 11 that flew into there. 33 years, and there's his ID card right there. Do the math, 33 years of age. He's flying into that building. Okay? You remember the lights that they shined after that? Where the two towers stood? They shined these lights up in the air every night for exactly 33 nights. I'm not kidding you. Okay? Sacrifice. They shined the light up to the heavenly luminaries. It was a sacrifice to the host of heaven. The Pentagon. I touched on this before, and there's a video called The Babel Conspiracy. You get a lot more of this in that video. There's another one called, that I did a couple years ago, called The Cult of 33. And it kind of gives you more of what this number is all about and how it was used. I'm just kind of touching the highlights here. But the Pentagon, actually, there is a ritual called the Great Rite Ritual. I know somebody who told me, I've known them practically all my life, that in their darkest days, they participated in a satanic sacrifice. There was actually a human being on that altar. And see, the Great Rite Ritual requires that the woman spread herself out and become the altar. An altar of sacrifice at the Pentagon building, September 11th, 2001. By the way, Pentagon building. Exactly 77 feet tall. Exactly. Okay? And whatever theories you have about what it was that blew that building up, the idea is that something penetrated that altar. And an altar, a burnt offering was made September 11th, 2001 at a building 77 feet tall. That's what happened. Okay? Virginia Tech killings. 33 people, including the shooter. Killed, dead, sacrificed. Remember the 33 miners? There's a movie coming out. Oh, I want to see that. There's a movie coming out. The 33 miners. Now think about it now. Here they are, and they're down in a pit. And they're trapped, and they can't get out. 33. All right? So they dig a hole. They penetrate there. They open it up. And they send down this little capsule that they called the Phoenix. The Phoenix goes down into the pit. And by the way, these 33 miners that are dead, they're so far down. You know how you like go in caves and they're cool? These guys are so far down, it's not cool down here, it's hot. Because they're closer to the molten center of the earth. And they're down there sweating every day. It's unbearable. And the Phoenix rises up 33 times, brings these guys back out of the pit. Do this. Go to Google and type in 33 dead or 33 deaths. 33 dead, 130 injured in China knife-wielding spree. At least 33 dead in Afghan suicide. Landslides in western Nepal leave at least 33 dead. 33 dead after Philippines ferry capsizes. And you know what? I think on some of these, it was more than 33 that died. But notice the headlines. At least 30. Why not say at least 30? Or at least 35. No. At least 33 dead China, dead in Afghanistan, dead in Nepal, dead when a ferry capsizes. Sacrifices to the host of heaven. Bon Scott, Highway to Hell. 33 years old. Chris Farley, Tommy like Wingy. 33 years old. Both of them drugs, by the way. Drugs and alcohol. Killed them dead. Altars of sacrifice to the host of heaven. Charleston, South Carolina sits between the 32nd and 33rd parallel. Sacrificed 9 people. That would be 3 times 3 by this wacko guy. Altar of sacrifice to the host of heaven. Morgan Freeman's granddaughter was stabbed to death by a guy who was so looned out of his mind. It was like her ex-boyfriend or something like that. And he was looned out of his mind. Talking about Satan and an exorcism that he was performing on her. She was 33. Listen to me. There were devils inside that man who killed Morgan Freeman's granddaughter when she's 33 years old. You just read the story. He was full of devils. A sacrifice to the host of heaven. Wow. Zephaniah chapter 1. Here's what God said. I will consume man and beast. I will consume the fowls of the heaven and the fishes of the sea. That's Baphomet. And the stumbling blocks with the wicked. And I will cut off man from off the land, saith the Lord. I will also stretch out mine hand upon Judah and upon all the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And I will cut off the remnant of Baal from this place. In the name of the Chimerims with the priests. I'm going to show you what that means in a minute. And them that worship the host of heaven upon the housetops. And them that worship and that swear by the Lord, and that swear by Malcolm, or which is Milcom, I think, and them that are turned back from the Lord, and those that have not sought the Lord, nor inquired of Him. Now, here's what's interesting. God said, I will consume man and beast, Baphomet, fowls of the heaven, fish of the sea, Baphomet, okay, and stumbling blocks of the wicked, And then he said, the remnant of Baal, and he said, and the name of the Chimerims with the priest. Now, I had to look that word up, Chimerims. You know what it means? There's several possibilities, but one of the definitions of the word Chimerims was that they were black-robed, idolatrous priests. Wow. Black-robed, black-robed priests who worship idols. We have that now. And by the way, Roman Catholicism worships the host of heaven, do they not? Because when you go to a Catholic church, you don't just see a statue of Jesus. In fact, that's probably not the first thing you see when you go into a Catholic church. You see an image of Mary. You see an image of St. Joseph, St. Frank, St. Bulldog. These saints are the host of heaven, who they say, who the Catholic Church says, has a part in your salvation. You go in that church and you do that stuff, you are worshiping the host of heaven. And the Catholic Church does a sacrifice of a 33-year-old Jesus every time they have church. It's called the sacrifice of the Mass. And they kill the 33-year-old Jesus every time they have the Mass. Now, I know that that's not the real Jesus, because my Bible says that he only offered himself up one time. Not thousands of times every day. Think about how many Catholic churches there are in this world. And some of them have Mass every day. Thousands of times a day, they're killing on an altar in front of the hosts of heaven a 33-year-old Jesus, quote unquote. You get it? We're going there, aren't we? It's already in place. Last thing I'm going to show you, because with all this evil, see, read the rest of the story of Manasseh. I don't have really time to get into it, but read the rest of the story of Manasseh. Manasseh doesn't win. He sets up that God in the temple of God. That God does not defeat Jehovah God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, whose son is Jesus Christ. Doesn't destroy him. God always gets it in the end, doesn't he? Zephaniah chapter 1, verse 14. The great day of the Lord is near. It is near, and hasteth greatly. Even the voice of the day of the Lord, the mighty man shall cry there bitterly. That day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, a day of wasteness, a day of and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness, a day of the trumpet and alarm against the fenced cities and the high towers. We already read at the beginning of Zephaniah chapter 1 about Baphomet and all the priests and who are worshiping to all the host of heaven. And it's in that same chapter that God says, guess what? When I come, the day of the Lord, clouds and thick darkness and the trumpet, when I come to put a stop to all of that. I love it. I love this Bible. I love what it says. I love how it says everything. It's like, and here's what I'm going to tell you. There are going to be more killings. There are going to be more sacrifices. And look for this number 33. Now don't make it too complicated, because I don't think it really is. But look for this number now. I don't know. I'm not a prophet. But I'm telling you, more sacrifices are going to be made to the host of heaven. More altars. And that number is going to show up. And when it does, you'll say, you know what? This that which was spoken by the prophet. This Bible's coming to life right now. Read it, believe it, study it, meditate on it, think on these things, Paul said. God will bless you. And be ready for the day when the clouds come and the trumpet sounds. Day of the Lord. Be ready for that day. I am. I hope you are too. All right? God bless you. We're moving along here. We're building the pyramid. We're going to see what comes next, all right, in the next Watch 'Em Broadcast. God bless you. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.